But we got some fun to be having. Well, because it's Monday. Now, a couple of program notes. No show tomorrow night and no show Friday. Why, Bob, you ask? Well, let me explain. Not going on strike. Just because contributions are really, really not doing well this month. I'm not going on strike or anything. Now, far be it from me to criticize. If you want to run over to headonradionetwork.com and hit that PayPal button with a sledgehammer, that'd be nice. There are some of you who are queuing up for the Thrifty 250. We're still trying to get to that Thrifty 100, but we are making our way into that territory. But we are a long way from where we need to be, especially for the 11th day of October. No. I've got a meeting tomorrow night that I have to attend, and then Friday. Well, Friday's kind of me playing hooky, but not really. Friday is a matter of, Saturday is Bridge Day. And you may recall that I usually take Friday before Bridge Day off just to do stuff with the family. But especially this Friday, I'm going to be making my not world famous but really ought to be chili. And it's going to be good because we've got a wee little tiny chili festival or chili cook-off or some such in Fayetteville, sort of, kind of. It'd be a real chili cook-off, except for, I guess, at the last county commission meeting where decisions like this could be made, the entire congregation of the Third Apostolic Holiness Pentecostal Baptist Sanctuary and Herpetological Park showed up and said, "We can't be serving no beer!" Really? A chili cook-off without beer? Damn, that's like kindergarten without Play-Doh. Play-Doh, not Play-Toh. No, we don't run that kind of an advanced kindergarten around here. Seriously, so it's not what it ought to be, but still, I'm doing my from scratch, everything fresh, you ain't never had nothing like it, chili. And that means I'm going to be working like a dog on Friday. And won't be able to make the show because I got to be over in Fayetteville later that night, because if I don't spend the night over in Fayetteville, well, I won't get there the next morning because they close down the bridge, and then you've got to go to, you know, to get from here to Fayetteville, you've got to go via Lompoc, and it just doesn't happen. So that's why no show Friday. No show Tuesday, no show Friday. My apologies. But you know what? We will make up for it in the fun that we will have tonight, and Wednesday night, and Thursday night. Fair deal, cool. Now coming up later in the program, because you know this is Moran Monday, right? Yeah, every Monday's Moran Monday on the Horn, because it seems like a weekend's worth of news is enough to make nothing but morans, and so Moran Monday. One of these days we will get, somebody will write the lyric, me, John Fox, all of us working together, who knows, we'll write the lyric to Moran Monday, and we'll have a Moran Monday theme. For now, however, thanks to our good friend Scott in Sweden, we do at least have Moran Monday music. You know the type, right? Sure. Moran Monday music. But since it is Moran Monday, and I've got a lot of Morans to talk about, and a lot of them happen to just be here in West By God, Virginia, because, you know, it's political season, and the political idiots are out running around. You've got somebody has apparently turned Joe Manchin loose with a firearm, which, you know, duck! Then there's John Racy, his opponent. And he's a Moran, so let's see. Joe's a Moran. John's a Moran. We've got Morans running for the House of Representatives on both sides. Lucky for y'all, I have the antidote to all the Morans this evening. Because, here in about 53 minutes, we will be joined by Jesse Johnson. Jesse Johnson is running on the Mountain Party ticket in West Virginia for the Senate seat. And it's safe to say, and notable, that Jesse Johnson is the only liberal and or progressive, depending on which word you prefer. You know I prefer liberal. I wear it proudly. He's the only one running for the seat. And once you've heard Jesse, You'll say, gosh, I wish I lived in West Virginia so I could vote for him. Well, you know what? Even if you don't live in West Virginia, you can still help. Maybe there will be some phone banking set up you could contribute your time to. Or maybe there will be, who knows, maybe you know somebody in West Virginia and you can get on the phone and go, dear Jesus, please vote for Jesse. Because really, we don't need either of the other two morons running for the office in the office. I mean, we're talking about big red bulbous noses, the goofy hair, the floppy shoes. We're talking about, in point of fact, a pair of clowns. And I almost said as much in the Charleston Gazette on Saturday. They published an op-ed of mine in which I made plain the fact that I am sickened by these two living, breathing mediocrities that are running for the office. So come about an hour from now, you will hear from by far the best candidate running for Senate from the state of West Virginia, by far one of the most interesting Senate races in the state. But right now, oh, that's right. Hurry, 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 it's Moran Monday on the horn. Step right up, get your program. You can't tell the Morans without a program. Moran Monday comes your way on the horn for nothing more than your simple contribution of less than 5 cents per hour of horn programming per month, $10 a month, stuck behind this thin canvas where will be revealed to you. A collection of morons fit to drive you quite mad. We encourage pregnant women and small children not to go behind the tent, not to go inside the tent, not to look at the morons, as permanent damage may be done. But for the rest of you, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Such a gathering of morons you have not seen since last Monday. Or heard. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morans. Really and for true, morans. Right here, on the horn. Get your ticket. Get your program. Hey, Sonny, move along, Sonny. Go away, kid, you bother me. Moran Monday on the horn. And where do we start? God, where... There's so many places to start. Once again, we have the choice of dangerous morons, hateful morons, loopy morons, stupid morons, political morons, and sometimes political morons wraps into dangerous, crazy, and stupid. But I couldn't help noticing a post by Susie Madrack over at Crooks and Liars earlier today. Michigan man arrested with bomb materials. Loaded gun, bulletproof vest, and picture of Obama. Well, of course, there's all... You know, what? Like he was afraid he wouldn't be... Because there are so many other presidents of the United States. He had to have a... Maybe it was inspiration. Maybe it was masturbation material. We just don't know. But yes. A Michigan man named Richard Scott McLeod. McLeod, there can be only one! A Michigan man named Richard Scott McLeod of Brighton, Michigan, was arrested Monday in Weberville on weapons charges and is under suspicion for potential threats against President Barack Obama. God, all you gotta do is see the photo gathered from my Fox. Then you just go, well, of course. He had bomb-making materials in his car. He had information on his laptop relating to members of the extremist group Huttery, perhaps. He's 48 years old, a year older than me. He had some bumper stickers quoting Adolf Hitler. Well, you know, what's a good right-wing teabagging assassin without his bumper stickers quoting Adolf Hitler? I didn't know Adolf Hitler was in the bumper sticker business, much past, you know, Sieg Heil. You know, really? He had a picture of Obama. He had a loaded gun. He had a bulletproof vest. And he had some tips on, so you want to build a bomb and take down the Kenyan anti-colonialist. Jesus. Michigan militia. The Michigan militia. Michigan militia. Oh, dear. I feel something coming on. Wait a minute. What's his name again? Rich? Yeah, Rich McLeod. Hey there, Rich. What you say?
Step aside, you commies. It's my day. Lend an ear and listen to my version. I'm a really swinging, teabagging insurgent.
Pardon me, Rich. Is that the Michigan militia?
Yes, yes. Like everyone said, there's not a brain in our heads.
Did you really join the Michigan militia?
Oh, yeah. And we want to see that canyon drop dead.
You meet your contact at the trailer about 7:45. Realizes with the feds, but now it's too late. Everything's been recorded, cannot be avoided. Oh, oh, bagger, that's where you get with your hate. There's gonna be an arraignment in Ann Arbor. Sanctions and fines. You're gonna do some hard time. You're gonna wish you'd never said that Kenyan's name. The Michigan militia is gonna leave you taking the blame. Bop, 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 take the blame. Bop, 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 take the blame. You baggers are all just the same. Okay, maybe I won't sing anymore for the rest of the night, but how can you not? God, right-wing hate. The musical, the vaudeville act. Where's Ed Ames and the hatchet? Hey, that was the soft shoe routine. My head writer, David in Tennessee. What's next, the soft shoe routine? That, trust me. See, that's one of the reasons we got to do video, because I had all the footwork going. I had some sawdust thrown on the down. Yeah, see? God. Morons. They hurt my head. Ugh. No, okay, enough of that. That was just too cute. It ain't that. Oh, look, I tried to get Guy James on to sing that, but the man's busy. Haters. That's what you are, a bunch of haters. Yeah. God. Jack Benny, George Burns couldn't sing a lick. I loved him. Jack Benny and that god-awful violin. It's tough, I tell you. No respect. No, okay, moving on. You know we've got an ugly, ugly, really ugly, hateful senatorial campaign going on here in this state, right? Yeah. If you checked with the major media, with the exception of what I had to say in the paper this past Saturday, saying loud and clear and plain that I'm voting for Jesse Johnson, you'd think that the only two people running were Joe Manchin and John Racy, who are so close together on issues that they're like those megalithic stones that form the walls of ancient Inca compounds. You couldn't slide a piece of paper between them. They're that close. But by God, not to watch their advertisements, they're not. Oh, no. No. Why? Well, let's start with John Racy. And this is just one of his many ads. You'll recall that, what was it, last week he got caught putting together an ad whose casting call called for guys in Philadelphia who apparently had never heard of West Virginian, but to show up for the casting call dressed with that hickey look. That hickey look. Flannel shirts, trucker hats, you know. West Virginians, because we don't own no suits here. Mm-mm. And our women's dresses in hops, flour sack dresses. Ooh, they're sexy. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's start Let's start with John Racy. Now, remember, John Racy is a multimillionaire who lives in a mansion in Florida and still calls himself a West Virginian. This is the guy who, when asked where his money came from, said, "I earned my money the old-fashioned way. I inherited it."
Joe Manchin will do anything to avoid talking about being a rubber stamp for Barack Obama. "I'm a businessman who's created thousands of jobs, but not bigger government. I'm not perfect, but you don't have to be to know Obama's policies have hurt us. Obamacare means big government."
Wait a minute, I thought he was running against Joe Manchin. Huh? What? Let's try this again.
"Joe Manchin will do anything to avoid talking about being a rubber stamp for Barack Obama. I'm a businessman who's created thousands of jobs, but not bigger government. I'm not perfect, but you don't have to be to know Obama's policies have hurt us. Obamacare means big government. Cap and trade hurts coal. Obama's tax increases hurt families."
Now stop that. Obama's tax increases hurt families? What? I mean, I guess truth in advertising's been dead for a while, but really? Barack Obama signed a tax... a middle-class tax cut. A tax decrease. Obama's tax increases hurt families. This guy owns radio stations, by the way. Can you tell from the radio station voice? Yes, he's using the voice of control, but I don't think he's quite perfected the weirding module yet.
"And Joe Manchin rubber stamps all of these. I'm John Racy, and I approve of this message, because I won't be a rubber stamp to Barack Obama."
Yeah, you know, that's sickening. Because, do you understand what's behind all of that? How many times did he say rubber and Barack Obama? What he's creating in the mind of knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing West Virginians all across the state is a mental image of Barack Obama having sex with Joe Manchin. That's what all that, that's why the word rubber appears no less than three times, possibly four. I didn't count inside that ad. Barack Obama, rubber, Barack Obama, Joe Manchin, rubber, Barack Obama. See how they work? Jesus Christ, it's sickening. But that's okay. But that's okay. Because Joe Manchin is firing back. And I do mean firing.
"I'm Joe Manchin. I approve this act because I'll always defend West Virginia. As your senator, I'll..."
Oh, wait, do we have a little slide guitar going in there? Or I don't know, strange tuning or something? Because as it's playing, he's walking through the woods, and you see him bring... And he's got a rifle gun in his hand. He's going to shoot him out.
"Protect our Second Amendment rights. That's why the NRA endorsed me. I'll take on Washington and this administration to get the federal government off of our backs and out of our pockets."
How many liberals do you know with an endorsement from the National Republican Rifle Association? Yeah, me either. Are we beginning to get the picture here? This is a Republican running against a Republican. There's no Democrat running. It's that simple. You know, this is a guy who privatized our workers' compensation system. Democrats don't do that. This is a guy that hasn't provided a pay raise for teachers in, 6 years? Democrats don't do that. When he first became governor, Joe Manchin sent a memo around to all the employees of the state of West Virginia telling them that, by God, there was a new sheriff in town and there'd be a dress code coming. And he issued his dress code, and, you know, state workers don't make a lot of money. This is not a wealthy state. It should be the wealthiest state in the United States, but it's not. And state workers don't make a bunch. And they said, "Hey, Joe, we don't have your money. We don't have the ability to go, you know, shopping and have a wardrobe of 14 suits. Now, we've got a little operation here in this state called Gabriel Brothers. And Gabriel Brothers is a retail location, and what Gabriel Brothers does is they go to the factories and they buy seconds. And the things that can't be sold as perfectly finished goods wind up at Gabriel Brothers, marked down drastically. And so Joe Manchin's response to the complaints of working people about his Brooks Brothers dress code was to say, "Well, what do you think Gabe's is for?" Yeah, that's our Joe. Oh, he's cost this state millions of dollars in all the elections because we're not done. We're going to have more elections if he should happen to win this race. We're going to have more elections. There's other stuff that Jesse Johnson can tell you about in the next hour. I hope you'll be listening. But you know what? This gun ad is actually more cynical than Rubber Barack Obama, Joe Manchin, Joe Manchin, Rubber Barack Obama, Barack Obama's got a rubber on and he's doing Joe Manchin, John Racy ads. This is more cynical than that. Of course, there's enough time left between now and the election for John Racy to be in an ad with, a howitzer? Maybe a tank. As long as he doesn't do the stupid Dukakis thing and, you know, be seen. No. Maybe he can just stand behind some Civil War cans dressed up as a Confederate soldier yelling, "Fire!" God almighty. No, this is cynical. This is really cynical. Hey, look, hey, Marvelline! Joe Manchin's got him an ad out where he's showing off his shooting gun. Reckon we'll have to vote for him now. That's what they want.
Joe Manchin, I approve this ad because I'll always defend West Virginia. As your senator, I'll protect our Second Amendment rights. That's why the NRA endorsed me.
Now wait. I know some people are put off by talk about guns and they're really made a little bit nervous by the idea that there are liberals like me out there who have guns. But dear Jesus, what kind of... Now, we haven't seen what the target is going to be in this ad yet. You know, the magic of radio... The best radio guys are the ones... radio people are the ones who can do baseball on the radio. You know, the great ones of days gone by. Your Harry Carey's. What's his name? Did the Brooklyn Dodgers, Red Barber, they're Legion, Ernie Harwell, Vin Scully. You know, a rain delay is when one of those guys, Joe Nuxall, a rain delay comes along, you're actually enjoying it because it's going to be story time. And it really does. Radio becomes theater of the mind. Because all we have is audio to describe things that we see. Yeah, you know, me and Harry Carey. So what we've got here is Joe walks toward the camera with his shooting arm out of sight, but then he begins to raise it while he's talking about how he'll always protect us and our Second Amendment rights.
I'm Joe Manchin. I approve this ad because I'll always defend
him. And that's a long shot. Again, okay, there's something that might be the target out in the distance, but it looks like it's a piece of paper. And I want to get this right.
West Virginia, as your senator, I'll...
That ain't no little pissant rimfire 22 round he's going to shoot that piece of paper with. No, by God. I don't know, what is that, the 222? The 220 mag? Hell, that might be a .30-06 round. I can't tell.
Protect our Second Amendment rights. That's why the NRA endorsed me. I'll take on Washington.
And that sound you heard was the bolt sliding in. It's a bolt action. He ain't no sissy. assault rifle. He ain't using no semi-automatic, by God. The only thing that surprises me out of this ad is he doesn't lick his thumb and go out there and wipe the front. No, that's because he's got a scope on the rifle. Jesus Christ, he's got a scope for shooting a piece of paper at 20 feet. He would have done better. He really would have done better to have left the scope alone and taken that, lick the front of the thumb, like, and go out there and lick the, and just kind of nick the front sight with it and explain to us that it cuts down on the haze. But no, he's got a 3x9 scope. Really? He's going to shoot a piece of paper with it.
And this administration to get the federal government off of our backs and out of our pockets.
Federal government's on our backs and in our pockets. Well, how could that possibly be? Wait a minute. What did I miss here? What did I miss here, Defender of Freedom Joe?
I'll take on Washington and this administration to get the federal government off of our backs and out of our pockets. I'll cut federal...
In other words, so's we can keep on a-blowing up our mountains and poisoning you people. Y'all like it when we poison you, don't you? Mm-hmm.
Federal spending, and I'll repeal the bad parts of Obamacare. I sued EPA, and I'll take dead aim at the cap and trade bill. Because it's bad for West Virginia.
No, really. He shot the cap and trade bill. We've got a Senate candidate who's shooting bills. You gonna take your rifle there and you gonna shoot you some liberals, Joe? You gonna take your gun to Washington, huh? I guess you sure enough showed them damn sissy liberals that there's gonna be a new sheriff in town. Gonna bring my gun to Washington. Yeah, yeah. God almighty. Morons. Morons. Yeah, why not? You know what? Again, I mentioned the rubber Obama mansion, rubber mansion Obama, Obama rubber mansion. You know what that means now? I'll take on this administration. And then he shoots the cap and trade bill? He really, really shot the cap. But you know what's pathetic? You folks who are prone to knowing how to edit video out there, go watch this thing. Oh, where is it? It's at joemanchinwv.com/video. New ad in Dead Aim. Dead Aim? Governor Manchin repeats pledge to be independent voice in the Senate. Do right. Do what is right for WV. That's just sickening. Dead Aim. He's trying to play on the prejudices of West Virginians and primarily baggers who would like to see people like, what was his name? Yeah, Rich from Michigan succeed. It's getting a little creepy around here. It's getting a little bit scary around here. And the only sane voice in this election is Jesse Johnson. Who's a corporatist? Joe Manchin's a corporatist. John Racy's a corporatist. Jesse Johnson, not a corporatist. Who's willing to stand up and raise a stink about Citizens United? Not Joe Manchin, not John Racy, but Jesse Johnson would. Who thinks Social Security is just fine the way it is? Not Joe Manchin, not John Racy, Jesse Johnson does. Who wants everybody to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick? Not John Racy, not Joe Manchin, Jesse Johnson does. You understand why I'm going... This is going to be... This will be... Well, it'll be the second time, the second or third time I've voted for Jesse. I have never, ever voted for a Republican in my entire life, and I hope never to. If in the afterlife, as the Christians like to put it, there's some sort of a test or a day of judgment, and they read off all of your faults and all of your shortcomings, well, I'll have a lot to answer for. I will have a bunch to answer for. But there is one thing I will never have to answer for. I will never have to say, Lord, I'm sorry, because I voted for a Republican. That I will not have to do. I cannot believe that in 2010, why even finish? I can't believe that in 2010, I'm watching a commercial from a guy who claims to be a Democrat, who's using a live firearm and has to have the shot right between the eyes, dead aim, edited in. It's kind of like a firearms version of the Heck ad, you know? I wonder who actually shot the one that, because it's right, it shoots it right in the middle of its dirty cap and trade.
Junior. I'm Joe Manchin.
Oh, I know, Joe. I just want to see. Yeah. He shoots it right in the middle of Right under the T in trade. Cap and trade bill. Now, bear in mind, there's never been anything called a cap and trade bill. There was Waxman Markey in the House, and then there was, nothing really in the Senate. And certainly nothing called a cap and trade bill, but Joe is relying on West Virginians to not be quite sharp enough to figure that out. Well, he's willing to shoot. He's going to go kill him some liberals, Marveline. By God, I'm going to vote for him twice, just like Granddaddy used to do. Back when they was passing out the four roses out of the trunk in pants. Yeah, I know. David in Tennessee just asking, can't you just hear the focus group guy in Philly that helps with these ads? Mr. Manchin said plainly, for you to succeed, you need to tap into your state's desire to see the colored guy dead. Like I said, it's going to be a busy night. Very busy. Oh, there's a lot going on down here, as the saying goes. Up in New York, we got Carl Paladino, who apparently figured out that the way to get to the Hasidic community's heart was to hate on the homos some more. We've got the audio. Yeah. And now he's demanding an apology from journalists. No kidding. Busy, 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 busy. Then there's the stuff coming out about Glenn Beck out of the jailhouse of the guy that I've been talking about for a while that went out to shoot up the Tides Foundation in California, but made the mistake of getting a little too liquored up first. But then there's this. Oh, just one more. Come on, for the fun of it. No, we'll do it. We'll do it after the break. Because I want to take a break. It's about 23 minutes before the hour. Are Spike Maynard's ears pointed? More importantly, more to the point, is his tail pointed? Does he have cloven hooves? I'm beginning to wonder. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
have a bone to pick with Bubble Genius. They're making voodoo dolls of me, Sarah Palin, stuffed with elephant poo paper. You real Americans, don't retreat. Reload. Don't settle for a doll. Stick pins in the real thing. Now my advisor said, "Oh, Sarah, I don't think you mean that." So I fired him on the spot for infringing on my First Amendment rights.
Bubble Genius, bath and body stuff that's good for your body and your funny bone. Try our apple pie scented boat soap or Eau de Wonk perfume.
Those Bubble Geniuses sound like commie, pinko, socialist to me. I mean, vegan soap I wash with reindeer fat like a true American.
Bubble Genius for Election Day. Check out our promotion on Facebook to get a free soap for voting.
I repudiate your statement, you cackle of rads. The lamestream media is in the pocket of big soap.
Bubble Genius for Election Day and every day, but especially for Election Day.
So, how's that soapy, sudsy thing working out for you?
www.bubblegenius.com.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Minutes before the hour. This is the Horn. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. And, enough shilly-shally and about. Remember, Jesse Johnson will be joining us at the top of the hour. A couple of emails rolling in. Marty letting me. There's one senator who's gotten, one liberal who's gotten the NRA endorsement, Bernie Sanders. Okay. Stand corrected. The Texas Betsy, our blogger, pointing out to me that Chris Matthews, Chris Matthews endorsed Joe Manchin today. Why am I not surprised? Then again, something else happened today in West Virginia. Bill Clinton came to Morgantown, which is when he's not living in Florida, John Racy's backyard. Bill Clinton came to Morgantown to campaign and stump around for Joe Manchin. And Bill Clinton has fallen once again in my eyes. God forbid Bill should just sit this one out. But I'm sure he was begged. Thanks, Bill. Thanks. Thanks for coming to stump for a guy who is openly waging war against my family. Who's complicit in blowing up communities around my state. Who opposes a woman's right to control the functions of her own body. Thanks, Bill. Thanks. Ron writing in from Raleigh, and he says, speaking of bumper stickers, this weekend I was following a Chrysler Town & Country minivan with this bumper sticker, "End socialism, get out and vote, our future depends on it." Three guesses as to the race and age of the woman driving. Yeah, and I don't need two of them either. Ron also notes that last week on Morning Edition on NPR, they ran a profile of the race between Manchin and Racy, wherein Joe Manchin was referred to as popular Democratic Governor Joe Manchin. Says Ron, I almost choked on my Honey Nut Cheerios. But you see, that's the way he is portrayed around here. Because, you know, he won his first gubernatorial term with 70% of the vote. I think the Republican Party was running, a lump of sphagnum peat moss. Yeah. So that kind of explains that. But, you know, Joe's a nice guy. You know, he'll shake your hand, have a beer with you, and that's fine. I just don't. There's a difference between wanting to have a beer with somebody and wanting them to be your senator, especially when they're actively working against your family's best interest and the prospect of your grandchildren growing up without, you know, having a baby's arm grow out of their head or something from all the godforsaken toxins that a certain industry unleashes on this state minute by minute, second by second, day by day, and hour by hour, and year by year, and week by week, and decade by decade. You see, yes. Okay, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Jim?
Can you hear me okay?
I hear you.
Listen, this doesn't have a great deal to do with Moran Mundy or any of your political candidates, but it's a story I wanted to share with you, if I may.
Go right ahead.
Last night on PBS, they had a program called Nature. And this program dealt with a man named Ernest Thomas Seton, who lived back at the latter part of the 19th century in New Mexico. And his given profession at this time was to shoot wolves at the behest of the cattlemen, because the wolves were destroying the cattle. And mind you, wolves are predatory animals. They're beautiful animals. Highly intelligent, well attuned to their environment. But there was one wolf who was like the king wolf of his pack. His name was Lobo. And this guy did everything he could to trap Lobo. He would leave pieces of poisoned meat loaded with strychnine and traps of all types to try to catch him. Every time he would leave the meat out in the prairie, loaded with strychnine, he would come back to see if he could find a dead wolf. What he found were all of his poisoned meat stacked in a pile, and the wolf had left his own calling card on top of it, as if to say, look, I know what you're about, and I know what you're trying to do, and you're not going to get me like this. And this guy stalked this wolf for months, between the winter of 1893-1894. And the only way he was able to catch him or to attract him, some local villagers had told us that they thought Lobo had mated with this beautiful white wolf named Blanca. Now, I'm not sure about the mating habits of wolves, but I understand in certain cases they mate for life. And they are certainly capable of having very strong familial connections between one another. Well, he did, in fact, trap Blanca, Lobo's mate, and dragged the carcass back to his shack where he was conducting his operations against these animals from. And he could hear Lobo wailing in the distance, and it wasn't his characteristic cry of a regal animal, but it was an animal whose spirit and whose heart had been broken. Using the carcass of this dead animal as bait, he finally trapped Lobo, and he pulled out his .30-06 and was going to shoot him. He could not do it. And he realized that for all his efforts, maybe he had been on the wrong side of nature. Lobo lived for a while, and I saw the picture of Lobo. He weighed about 175 pounds. He was a very large wolf. But 2 days later, Lobo died of a broken heart. Mr. Seaton buried the two together. And after that, he became one of the most active animal rights conservators, working with Teddy Roosevelt to establish our national park system and to protect animals. He also, later, founded the American Boy Scouts of this country. Baden Powell had established a similar organization in England, and Seaton established the Boy Scouts in America. The man had had a change of heart. And even though his victory was achieved, he realized it was a Pyrrhic victory. And he owed the natural animal population of this country something for what he had taken away. When I saw this story, needless to say, very, very large, copious quantities of tears were flowing from my eyes. And at the same time, I thought about people like Sarah Palin.
Kind of hard not to.
He enjoys getting in a helicopter with a .30-06 with a lineman's coat and shooting anything that moves for no reason at all other than the thrill kill.
Indeed.
It's amazing what people will do, won't it?
Well, and remember, Sarah doesn't just enjoy the killing. They land the helicopter thereafter, do they not, Jim? Where she cuts off the forelimb.
I don't know what she does.
That's what you're supposed to do. You have to land and cut off, you know, you don't want to, don't just leave the wolf, but cut off its leg to show that, and it's got to be like the left forelimb or something insane like that to, you know, to prove, you know, to meet the, you know, get your bounty.
Well, I'm quite familiar with ear counts and things of that nature and other wars that we fought and this type of thing. And I just find that whole thing absolutely repellent. But here's one man who started out as a hunter. And when he achieved his prey, it was dust in his mouth. And spent the rest of his life trying to make up for what he had done.
Trying to work it off.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no reason for anyone to be hunting anything that they consider dangerous just for the sake of killing it.
Well, the fact of the matter is where things that are deemed vermin are concerned, it's been proven time and time again, Jim, putting hunting pressure on them only makes them breed faster. So, because nature, you know, nature's always going to be one step ahead.
Well, I know that. And this is a particularly poignant story because the man, in fact, had realized that what he did was wrong. And he had a big enough heart and conscience and sense of social responsibility to ameliorate the conditions that existed in this country for so long. Killing buffalo, things of that nature, And of course, when you kill the buffalo, you have the cows that are bred into absolute domesticity that make a natural prey for wolves. But there are certain things whose spirit cannot be broken. They're wild by nature. And in their wildness, there's an element of beauty. I have a wolf that comes up to my patio a couple nights a week, and I can see he's a gorgeous gray timber wolf, a beautiful animal. And he talks, he speaks, he howls. And it just reminds me a great deal of the natural order of things.
Well, you know, over at Crooks and Liars earlier today, one of the first things I saw, Jim, and this is far from the majesty of a wolf, but it was a simple video of a pair of tortoises. And, you know, tortoises live to be quite old. I think you can count the rings on their shell or something, if I'm not mistaken.
A tortoise can live as long as 300 years.
Yeah. And these were just, you know, land tortoises. These were just, you know, ground-based ones, not sea turtles or anything. But it was a pair of tortoises. One of them, and you know, to flip on one's back is death to a tortoise. And there was another one nearby who literally worked until it pushed and righted the other one, you know, four legs to the ground so it could move along. Naturally, of course, I showed the video to my wife, Ellie Mae, I mean Agnes, who was moved to tears by it. Because more and more we find out that the assumptions that we make, and they come from... And the assumptions come from some really pernicious places in our human nature, in our human mythic past. But more and more, we find out that the assumptions we make about the animal world are wrong.
The assumptions we apply to the animal world, we also apply to each other, Bob. I mean, today is October the 11th. This is National Coming Out Day for the lesbian, gay, transgender community. And this is the day in which people try to show their own feelings and hope that they'll be understood and not hunted, not pursued, not poisoned, not burned, but people who simply wish to live in peace, in their own world, without having their heart, or their spirits broken.
Indeed, Jim. And in fact, our good friend, our chat room moderator, Lottie, sent a story along to me today from Belgrade. I don't know if you saw this or not. But it took Serbian riot police yesterday all day as they fought battles with hundreds of right-wingers who were throwing Molotov cocktails and stun grenades into the Gay Pride March in Belgrade. 120 people were hurt, Jim. They fired shots and threw Molotov cocktails at the headquarters of the ruling pro-Western Democratic Party. They set the garage of the building on fire. They attacked the state TV building. They attacked the other political party's headquarters. They shattered the window. They shattered windows with stone throwing. The protesters, for all they were worth, at full voice, chanted "Death to homosexuals." They threw bricks. They threw stones. They threw glass bottles, stun grenades. The police had to respond by firing tear gas and putting out armored vehicles to disperse these hate-filled zealots who were actually in full charge mode.
And do you think any of these people will ever have their trip on the road to Damascus and realize the error of their ways and to repent and to recant and to try to at least make an effort to at least apologize and cease their ways of hateful thinking You know, I've gone through periods of my life in which I've done things, and I've realized they were wrong. As a boy, my mother taught me one thing. Never take anything you cannot give back. Whether it's life, whether it's dignity, whether it's the well-being of another person's psyche, or their feelings, or what is locked in their heart. And this is the reason I wanted to surface this story while it was still fresh in my mind. About Lobo Bonka and this gentleman who did have a road on the Damascus experience.
Yeah, sadly, the story you described with the wolf hunter, you know, the right wingers of today are not even capable of those road to Damascus moments.
Mr. Kincaid, let me tell you something. I spent a portion of my life shouldering a rifle and all types of weapons. And it taught men how to kill. Taught men how to lay mines. Use Bangalore torpedoes. Use light anti-tank weapons. I started out my career in civil service teaching trainers at Fort Jackson how to do this sort of thing. I couldn't do it anymore. And I finally got into a position as an education officer in which I could at least make better the lives of those men through education who had fought for this country. That might be very little compensation to the victims of the wars in which we fought. But at least I did have some type of volte-face turnaround and try to, at least in my own insignificant way, contribute to the betterment of the situation.
Well done. And sometimes, Jim, the road to Damascus is a road that we make. It doesn't wait for us. We create it.
Well, listen, you have a guest coming up, and thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you. Take care, Jim. Bye now. Touching. I'd like to see that documentary. I'm hoping that we will, in short order, be hearing from Jesse Johnson regarding the rioting in Belgrade. Our critic at large, Reverbo, notes the cops used to, at least there was law enforcement response. The cops used to just let those peaceful demonstrators get half beaten to death by right wing thugs. Indeed. And, you know, this is one of those little moments, I know that Barack Obama has not done enough to end the right-wing assault on people's sexuality in this country. I know. But deep in this story of what happened in Belgrade, there's a little sentence. And I just want you—I want you to answer. You don't have to call in or anything. But just answer this for yourself. In this story, there is reference to the fact that that an American diplomat, spoke to about 1,000 people yesterday. And did so in support of freedom. Freedom from fear, from harassment, from attack, And my question to you simply is this. That American diplomat, do you think for a moment that that American diplomat would have been enabled to say anything like what he said in support of the people marching in their pride parade under the administration of George W. Bush? Here's one for you. What if that American diplomat had been an ambassador placed by the McCain-Palin administration? Well, they probably would have been out there throwing rocks along with the rest of the right-wingers. You know how it goes. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. Stand by for a minute, will you? I need to check the phones here. Just as I thought. As promised, it being about 6.5 minutes past the hour, as promised, we have on the line with us right now the Mountain Party nominee for the unexpired term of the late Senator Robert C. Byrd here in West Virginia. I am very proud to have Jesse Johnson on the phone right now. Jesse, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much, Bob, for having me.
It is a pleasure, Jesse. I'm proud to call you my friend. And proud to have you on the program. I devoted a significant chunk of time moving into this conversation with the best I could do to describe the lunacy of this contest between two Republicans, Joe Manchin and John Racey, and to which you are the only logical and sane alternative. Tell us how the campaign is going so far.
Well, as many of my campaigns have been, it's a bit of an enigma in the sense that you don't hear much of me as far as media. You don't see a lot of me in the newspapers. All the classic examples of what has happened in the past have always, during the time that I've been, a nominee since 2004, have really just shifted. The way of doing business as far as journalism has shifted. And so we've kind of tagged ourselves as the unknown majority. We are on the ground, and on the ground the forces are growing and they're stronger every day. But as far as the media coverage, it's very spotty and it's minimal at best. In the case of, for instance, the Gazette just went on and endorsed Manchin and did not even hold an editorial board meeting for the general election.
The Gazette issued an endorsement without even so much as interviewing the opponents?
Yes, that's true.
That would be you and that would be Mr. Racey. Now, Jesse, you know me. I have no use for John Racey. I generally have no use for Republicans. But in this case, I've been a Democrat all my life.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am is a liberal Democrat.
Right.
And to hear people tell it, there aren't any of us here. Apparently I'm imaginary, like, unicorns and pixies and leprechauns, liberal West Virginians. But I have a feeling there's a lot more of us than meets the eye. But your job is not made any simpler by virtue of the fact that you're being treated as imaginary.
Exactly. Well, it's ironic, really. In 2008, when I was nominated for governor, at that time, I got the endorsement of former House member and state senator and a nationally known state senator and first, woman nominated for a major party nomination for governor, Charlotte Prith. She endorsed me. She wrote an op-ed piece that she submitted to the Gazette, and they cut her down to a letter to the editor. And finally, after great protests, printed that. Former United States Senator Mike Gravel, which is actually one of the most famous and significant U.S. senators in the history of the United States, not only is he, you know, he's the only one who was actually pulled before the Supreme Court, but of the United States, but he also is most noted for being responsible for, as a politician, for ending the Vietnam War by reading the Pentagon Papers into the congressional record. The quintessential, you know, copy is called the Gravel edition of the Pentagon Papers. And he endorsed me for governor in 2008 and wrote an op-ed piece, and that so-called liberal rag, you know, the Charleston, West Virginia Gazette would not print it. And so, you know, it's a strange time in our society. It's a strange time in government. It's a strange time in the economic freefall that we're experiencing in this country. It's almost as if we have bags over our heads, which has been one of the keys for sort of our takeoff on the unknown majority.
And there is a majority in this state, frankly. I genuinely believe it simply by virtue of the numbers that I'm seeing, Jesse. I would say that most West Virginians understand that, among other things, mountaintop removal is wrong.
Yeah.
And yet neither of the moribund political parties in this state have anything approaching the political courage to say that. And for the life of me, it astonishes me because, coal contributes less than 11% of West Virginia's gross state product, and yet it owns our political system as a wholly owned subsidiary?
Well, it owns our media. I mean, that's really the basis of this issue. When you consider that approximately 80% of the advertisement dollar that goes into television, goes into radio, goes into the newspapers in the state of West Virginia comes from the very extractive industries as well as other industries of the polymer alliance zone that I have fought against for the rights of safety in the workplace for the workers, et cetera. These are the very things that, you know, those dollars want to make sure that the people don't know about. And so, you know, it's no surprise I'll go to a public meeting, and then when I get up to take the podium and make a statement, often the cameras will be flicked off. You'll watch the little red light turn off, and they'll turn the camera to the side, almost in protest. It's funny to watch the media almost in protest, and I'll point it out to the crowd, but they're very seldom really called on it. Because who's going to call, you know, a foul on the media?
Well, I know you're crisscrossing the state for all you're worth, and probably gone through a couple of sets of tires by now. How are you getting your message out?
Well, definitely on the ground, on foot. I have volunteers around the state who are making, you know, their own signs, their own handouts. There are these little Audacity of Hope poster cards that some people are doing, and the other thing that the people really love is the barf bag, which has sort of my tagline: "Are you sick enough yet?" Of the, you know, this two political power structure that is robbing you, your children, your grandchildren of their future. And then, much like Star Wars, you know, in the credits, it sort of trails off, starting with, you know, the assault on our Constitution and private armies and you know, the assault upon us by, you know, these multinational corporations that are taking away our freedoms and have practically obliterated the Fourth Amendment at this point, and certainly a major attack on the First Amendment all across the country. But there's no place where it's really more obvious and prevalent than in West Virginia, but unless you're on the ground, you really don't see it. And if you're sitting at home in the comfort of, you know, in the comfort of your home watching television, then you won't notice it probably.
Well, obviously, and everybody who listens to this program knows that mountaintop removal is the single greatest issue facing this state at this time. And for our foreseeable future as well, Jesse. But Beyond that, there are other issues on which you could be a vital voice in the United States Senate for liberals and progressives. For instance, one of those things where you can't tell the difference between Racy and Manchin has to do with a woman's right to control the functioning of her own body. I take it that you have no problem being pro-choice.
Well, I've been the only pro-choice candidate in since 2004. And one of the strange things is that we bifurcate all of these subjects, and the powers that be want to create this grand game with only two teams on the field. And, you know, the reality is most people, they're not in favor of abortion. They would love to see, that prevented in the beginning, just like catastrophic illness. But at the same time, and we need to respect the right of people to choose their own destiny, to learn their own lessons in life, and to, fulfill, their own destiny with their bodies. And the irony is that a lot of times, you'll have men who are chiming in on this subject, and they believe that it'll never affect them. But once you give the government so much leash, you really never know where it's going to go. And I think that ultimately, if we start allowing the government to have control of our bodies, starting with women, it's going to spread to everyone. And everyone, it's a fundamental right of Americans to have choice. It's a fundamental right of Christians to have choice. I don't believe that Jesus would have wanted Rome making those decisions any more than we want our government getting involved in our decisions in our own bedrooms. And most people, even conservatives are all up in arms about eminent domain and property rights, but they sometimes have no problem with going into other fields and repudiating their this whole subject is so convoluted. And
well, it is so intensely personal, isn't it, that the single answer is leave it. I mean, if we want to inject God or some concept of a deity into the debate, I suppose under the First Amendment, that's anybody's given right. But the fact of the matter is, the issue remains one that should be determined by the woman in consultation, hopefully, with competent medical advice and her conscience or her God or her goddess or whatever the decision-making process is.
Absolutely. We all need to have freedom, and that's what this country was founded upon, is the concept of freedom and liberty for all. And for us to start legislating morality, legislating the bedroom, the people's homes, all of these have been infringement upon the rights of our citizenry, and it needs to really be put into context and stopped. This is like the separation of church and state. You hear these arguments, and people are arguing for, having no separation between church and state. And in that particular instance, it's not just protecting the state from the church; it's protecting the church from the state. And this is classic, and it goes throughout history. But these are the things that we face. This is the doublespeak, the Orwellian talk that we're facing today. You have the neocons have taken over so much of our language, and unfortunately the progressives have and liberals have really just allowed it to happen. And I'm taking a stand. I'm fighting back for what I believe.
Okay, well, stop there for a minute, because I think you and I have just hit some turf that I think we can work over a little bit. You said the liberals and the progressives have let it happen. Would you please explain?
Well, I think that conservatives and those who have driven the conservative agenda are much more sophisticated tacticians and strategists than what we're seeing on the left. They have a more militarized approach. There are often people who have served in the military and believe in that top-down construct and not so much of individual freedom. You'll hear them, they always can, you know, consider this to be a republic as opposed to a democracy. You know, where decisions are made for you, even if you are the one who are choosing, you know, the decision maker, the decision is made for you, that as if the masses, the populace cannot decide these things on their own. And they believe that the Constitution enforces that and that it dictates that by, you know, Article 4, Section 4. That's not so. It's not so in, because the reality is that we as a country, and we all know that from our upbringing, you know, this one of the real truths that we did get in our education is that we're an amalgam, you know, we're the melting pot. We are, you know, we're not a capitalist society. We're this living balance between capitalism and socialism. You know, I was invited to talk to these tea parties, as was Ken Heckler, who endorsed me. And, you know, Ken and I sat there and listened to this railing about socialism, et cetera, and, you know, and I got up and I asked him, I said, you know, first of all, you've taken your name from the Boston Tea Party. And as I see it, you all consider yourselves very conservative, and you're railing against socialism. Now, let's look at the Tea Party, the Boston Tea Party. The Boston Tea Party was a bunch of liberals railing against multinational corporations and unfair taxation. Now, I believe that the enemy is still the same of the people, but you've lost, you know, your identity here. So I ask them, you know, I say, look, I come from educators and police officers. My father was a police detective. My mother was an educator. My brother was a police officer. I was a first responder myself. How many of you value your police? And the hands shot up around the room. How many?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Fire department. I'm sorry?
I said, oh, gosh, yes.
Yes, and how many of you value your fire department, your first responders, hands flying up everywhere? I said, how many of you value your military? Same thing. And I said, that's a socialistic construct of government. Don't you understand? My father, and I pointed out Racy and the rest of the Republicans on the stage, I said, unlike these, you know, cheerleaders for capitalism, my father knew that he would never be a rich man. He knew that there were caps on what he was going to make for a living so that he could provide you, your community, your family, you know, with safety for your property. My father laid his life on the line to do that, and he did it for pennies, in a sense, in comparison to the you know, the John Racy's and the Joe Manchin's of the world. And so why are you people so afraid of socialism when we are the biggest socialistic construct of government on the planet Earth? The question is, what's the balance? And I'm seeing no one seeking balance in this room other than myself, and I'm asking you to start seeking balance as well. And, you know, after I finished, I have to say, half the crowd, in that case, they didn't go to Racy. He got up and left, but the half went to Mike Warner at that time, and the other half got in line and came up to talk to me. And so, you know, I think it's important to have dialogue with all, you know, all the people with, and consider all sides of issues. But, you know, we have so many of these red herrings out there that are foisted upon us by the media on a regular basis, and partisan politics and the powers that control it.
Well, when you've got John Racy out there trying to create a mental image in people's mind of Joe Manchin having sex with Barack Obama, and you've got Joe Manchin out there trying to create images in people's minds that he'd be willing to shoot Barack Obama, your mention and your focus upon the media, I think, is well placed, Jesse. And under the circumstances, let me ask simply this, based on the spending that we're seeing all across the country and the spending that we're seeing by outside interests in West Virginia, what is your response to what the Supreme Court held in the Citizens United case?
Well, I think that that particular instance in January was one of the darkest moments in the history of the United States. I believe that it opened the door to an even darker period. You know, we've had problems with corporations. You know, I refer to corporations as our original form of cloning. It was the first cloning that we did in this country by virtue of you know, we cloned ourselves financially to protect our personal assets. And it's just grown from there. But now you have a situation where these clones, these corporate people, these entities of corporate personhood, they have more rights than citizens. And fundamentally, we really need to take a look at how fundamentally unfair that is to the citizenry of this nation. When you have an entity that, number one, is immortal, and number two, has no faith, has no moral compass, it only has a mandate for profit at any cost, that's a recipe for disaster, and that is a citizen, a corporate citizen, that I don't want living in my neighborhood.
Nor do I. The question then, is, and really, that's where this all has to go, is I think we've got a pretty good idea of how John Racey would behave in the Senate of the United States. He would vote lockstep with the corporatists and with Mitch McConnell and with, you know, whoever happened to be giving him the most money. There would not be a lot of difference in Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin is more conservative than Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln put together. So he wouldn't contribute much to anything that we would recognize, even if the Democrats hold on to it, as a liberal majority or even a Democratic majority. It's worth remembering that Joe Manchin, no member of the Manchin family has ever voted for another Democrat not named Manchin. And with that in mind, how does Jesse Johnson behave upon his entry into the Senate? How do you approach the job, Jesse?
Well, I would approach it as a true maverick, and I'm not taking it, once again, I'm not stealing the language of the McCain Palin mavericks. I'm more in the mold of the Mike Gravel, who was known as the maverick of the Senate, but he was a Democrat. And Congressman Ken Heckler, who was known as the maverick of the House, you know, he was a Democrat. I find it extremely laughable that Racey spends so much time and energy and money trying to portray Joe Manchin as this uber liberal, you know, and we all know, you know, if you're paying any attention, that there's no truth to that whatsoever. It's a strange time. It's strange language. It's very much like Fox, faux news network. How they language things and how they point to right of center and call it the extreme left. And where does that take us? And that kind of gets into, you know, holding your nose and voting for the lesser of two evils. Well, it's still evil. You know, it still takes you further and further and further and further to the point where you can't calibrate and find zero. You don't know where it is anymore. And that's, to me, that's what we're looking at with these two. To me, it's Goliath and his other brother, Goliath. They're very much the same. Everyone knows that Joe Manchin is. Or I would think that most Democrats in the state know that he is an extreme conservative, and, you know, in any other state he would be a Republican, and frankly he would have been in this state if it was two-thirds Republican instead of two-thirds Democrat. But if he loses this race, you know, to either of us, then, you know, he has only himself to blame, because he is a Democrat and he should be the Democrat, but he's not. And so, you know, that's why I've stepped up to the plate. I'm looking out for the environment. I'm looking out for social justice. I'm looking out for empowering the people. not corporations, not absentee landowners, not polluters, not the people who are destroying our culture and our history. And that's what's happening in this state, and at the expense of education, at the expense of you know, our sustainability. And, you know, I mean, he's privatizing every element and aspect of government that he possibly can. He started with Brick Street, and then he brags about Brick Street. He gets on stage, and he gets into meetings.
When Brick Street is a failure.
A dismal failure, you know. I pointed that out in the PBS debate in 2008. At that time, it had Martin Weiss had an E-plus rating. You know, that's the top third of the worst rating that you could possibly have.
E-plus?
Well, the doctors all across the state are not taking workers, you know, these Brick Street workers comp patients. And right now, you have the volunteer fire departments are struggling for survival and literally may start having to shut down and close doors around the state. They provide safety to 82% of the populace of the state of West Virginia. We can't allow these things to happen. But that's what keeps happening. And every time that he shifts something and we privatize, whether it's DOH or now he's working on the IT, you're losing institutionalized knowledge. And Reiki would do exactly the same thing, maybe on steroids. And when you lose institutionalized knowledge in government, you're erasing something that takes generations to build back. And that's the short-sightedness, that's the short-sighted approach in business and government that we are suffering from today. And I intend to change it.
I intend to help you. Jesse, let me ask you this. When we consider the political process in this state, and you've already mentioned media issues and money issues, what about campaign finance itself? Where do you what's your position? Would you be a drafter of legislation? Would you sit quietly on the back bench of the Senate, or would you sort of ignore the rules on being a freshman and run down to the front and raise hell?
Well, I would in the model of my friend and hero Mike Gravel, I would, as a freshman senator, I would raise a little hell, as well as Ken Heckler advocates hell raising. And it needs to be done. There's too much political correctness even in our government in that sense today. And the advice, of course, would be for me to sit up, shut up, and sit back, and so that I can get reelected. Well, you know, I'm trying to get elected for 2 years, and let's see what I can accomplish in 2 years, because I'll actually be trying to accomplish something other than my reelection. And you know, that's what we're not seeing today. That's what we're not seeing because of the lure of special interest. It's got to happen, though, or we're going to go the way of the Soviet Union. You know, our parents and grandparents thought that we would be in a giant struggle for the rest of our lives with an entity that no longer exists, an empire that no longer exists, because it went the way of all empires. You know, when you start looting the treasury and a giant military buildup, you know, then you're making a tragic mistake if you really value your form of government. And I value our form of government. I want to be a good steward of our form of government, our Constitution, as Robert C. Byrd was, and our Bill of Rights. We and our treaties... which are a part of our Constitution that the Bushes had no...
No, you mean you don't think that Geneva Conventions are quaint, Jesse?
I don't. I don't think that at all, and I certainly don't appreciate habeas corpus and posse comitatus being violated and the Patriot Act and on and on and on.
Well, let me ask you this. Where do you fall on... We're still in Afghanistan. We have entered our 10th year in Afghanistan. As a member of the United States Senate, one would presume that you would have a significant voice on something like that. When Barack Obama came along and said, I believe we need to be there for a couple of more years. Do you have a position saying, let's get the hell out?
Absolutely. That's one place where you can bet I will not be a rubber stamp for Barack Obama. I believe it's a tragic mistake, a tragic error for the nation and for, you know, for our Treasury. If you look at last month's Treasury statement, it was like $3.7 trillion budget. $1.7 trillion goes to the Department of Defense. Now, we're not at war. As a matter of fact, we've not been at war. We haven't had a legally, congressionally, you know, mandated war since World War II. We have no conventional enemy. No reason for this massive military buildup and the bases, more bases around the world than there are countries. This is insanity, and it's excess, and it is taking and wasting the real infrastructure and the value that we could have here at home to be the shining example to the world. But we're trying to do it through force, and that is not what made this country great.
Now, of course, all of this is predicated, anything resembling a fair election, Jesse, is predicated on being able to count the votes. Would you be a voice in the United States Senate for real verifiable voting?
Absolutely. That's another great problem that we have. And you brought up earlier, you know, I think you were alluding to public financing of elections, which I have advocated and fought for here in the state of West Virginia for many years now. And certainly even beyond during the time that I've been nominated and running for office. Public financing is crucial, but media reform is crucial. And in this case, you know, we've really got to take a new look at the entire process. When the America Votes Act came out and we allowed this restructuring of our vote all across the country, and it was under an administration that questionably came to power. And the Democrats and the Republicans, this is one of those times when the Democrats acquiesced and joined in and, you know, allowed these monumental changes to occur in the way that we count our votes. And we allowed our votes to be counted suddenly by electronic means, by basically and mostly by two companies. Over 80% of our votes in this country were recorded by Diebold and ES&S. And those two companies are owned by two brothers. And those two brothers had vowed to do everything they could publicly to assure that Bush was elected and reelected. And, and it didn't raise any red flags. Didn't raise any red flags with the people, and it didn't raise any red flags. Well, I can't say that. That's not true. There are people that it raised red flags with, but it didn't with our representatives. So they had passed the America Votes Act in 2002. At that time, Joe Manchin was the Secretary of State.
I do believe you're right.
Transition. And when I ran against him for governor in 2004, he was the Secretary of State overseeing his ascent with these new machines to a higher office yet still.
The machines that are unverifiable, that are for all intents and purposes video game voting machines. As you face the election here in West Virginia, Jesse, do you have any idea how many of the video game voting machines are still in use, or what percentage?
You know, I don't. But I do, you know, I've had concerns all along, and I certainly had concerns at the time in 2004, you know, and Bill Moyers, the great Bill Moyers on Now on PBS, stated, you know, he put a picture of Joe and the, you know, the state of West Virginia seal in the background, and he said, and I quote, "It's kind of like a Major League Baseball pitcher that gets to call all his own balls and strikes." And I thought that was very interesting and rather poignant. And it kind of begged the question, you know, why are we allowing these kinds of things to happen? And it's not, I'm not picking on Joe in that sense particularly, but it begs the question, why would we allow that to happen when one of the, you know, one of the things that's happening in this country, if we were really going to move to a more progressive form of voting, we should be able to with a PIN code, call in our vote, you know, via our cell phones, or perhaps, you know, we would have a much greater turnout than what we had in this, you know, this primary to determine who was actually going to be our United States Senator to take the place of the legendary Robert C. Byrd. You know, you had Manchin with 70% of approximately, and Rahe with 70% of the Republican vote approximately, but with what? 10% of the electorate.
Yeah, 10% of 70% or 70% of 10% is not a very large number.
It certainly isn't, and 90% did not bother to vote. And when I've gone out and I've campaigned on the ground all across the state, I can tell you why they didn't vote. I can tell you that these folks, these God-fearing, good, average citizens all across the state, they want some real substantive change. They want to see something done differently. They want to see and feel real change in their lives, but there's a hopelessness, and they don't even know what their options are. They don't even know that the Mountain Party has been on the ballot for a decade now on all the books. They don't even know who I am, because even though I've been nominated for governor twice and the United States Senate twice, you know, this is just a travesty for our electoral system that can actually even happen. And what was even more startling to me is how the Gazette brought that to our attention, that only 10% showed up to vote, and basically scolded the public instead of taking responsibility themselves for not informing the public of their choices.
And with candidates like both Rahe and Manchin, Jesse, doesn't it inure to their benefit to have an electorate that is depressed, an electorate that is demoralized, on the odd chance that they might actually go to that polling place and stand up on their hind legs and not choose either one of two sides of the very same coin?
Well, I certainly, you know, I'm working toward that. I believe that it's possible. I believe that when people have that choice, I can simply tell you this. I've seen Democrats around the state say, oh, my God, I didn't even know that you existed. Thank you. Thank God for you. And I don't have to vote for Rahe now. And I've had the same thing happen on the Republican side. So, you know, the strange thing is that these folks who should be informed should be, you know, it should be a matter of law that you know what the choices are.
Well, you know, one of the things that drives me absolutely crazy is that organized labor in this state, Jesse, ran out and not only said that they would back Joe Manchin, but said they wanted him just to appoint himself, you know, as if it was some sort of coronation. You have a long and proud history of supporting organized labor, don't you?
I do. I started to say no one could be more disappointed than myself. And I have to say, anyone who is tuned in to PBS tonight and the West Virginia Public Radio, please check out and listen to Living on Earth. There's a special on Living on Earth that actually features some of the subjects, some of the... Hello?
Yeah, you're here.
Okay. Some of the work that I have done and fighting mountaintop removal, and in particular, the one mountain that I believe is the clarion call for us to save is Blair, which should be, and I have spoken in more than 16 states talking about the need for us to preserve Blair Mountain as a not only a national battlefield, but also...
A national monument, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, and a labor history museum, national or international, labor history museum. It's the site of the second largest insurrection in the history of the United States of America next to the Civil War, where, for the first time, people were aerially bombed. It was the largest troop...
By their own government.
By our own government, with weapons of mass destruction. Mustard and sarin gas from World War I were dropped on those miners out, you know, on their march toward Blair. And there are more than a million rounds fired on Blair Mountain. You can go up there with a metal detector, and there's hits everywhere.
The thing just goes wild, doesn't it?
Goes crazy. And, you know, but that mountain is set for destruction, for a, you know, to be absolutely obliterated and removed. And that's revisited.
And the UMWA is as quiet as the grave on it, isn't they? Aren't they?
Well,
not quite as quiet as the grave, but not as loud as they should be.
Well, that's the thing. You know, the leadership of labor in this country disappoints me. The leadership on the local level inspires me. The rank and file inspires me. But the leadership disappoints me in the sense that, I earned my trade cards. And here, when I got nominated for governor in 2004, I actually was naive enough to think that I was going to get the support of the unions. And lo and behold, they line up with Joe Manchin, who had spent his career in the House and in the Senate and always advocating for right to work and literally, you know, wanting unions to disappear in the state of West Virginia, which they've been dwindling on a constant rate along with, you know, real coal miners and coal mining in general. The labor, you know, we have labor to thank for the fact that our children are working, and they're actually getting to go to school. We have labor to thank for an eight-hour workday. We have labor to thank for weekends. We have labor to thank for so much of the benefits of the 20th
for the middle class
United States. And it really, the turning point was right here in West Virginia with Blair Mountain.
And yet they can't see it. It astonishes me. Truly it does, Jesse. One last thing, and I really appreciate the time that you've so generously given us this evening. But one last thing. There are, in any third-party candidacy, you will always hear a hue and cry arise from the party faithful that a third-party candidacy vote is somehow deleterious. In other words, oh my God, if you vote for Jesse, that just means that John Racy's more likely to win. You want to address that for a sec?
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, what is their fear based on? And the crux of the matter is voting out of fear. That never should you vote out of fear. You should vote out of your aspirations, your dreams, your wants, your values, the needs that you have for yourself and your country and for your family and your community. That is what voting is for. Not for wasting it out of fear to hold your nose and vote for someone who doesn't represent any of the values of yourself or your party, you know, or things that you don't believe in life. You know, this is what has led us down the path that we find ourselves on, you know, at that point where we find ourselves today in this entire nation and certainly in the state of West Virginia. So, you know, first of all, there are these polls, these Rasmussen polls, the PPG polls, et cetera. I have these polls. I have the scripts from these polls. And you can see them. And those polls are not scientific. The press will tell you that they're scientific. The press will even tell you that I have 2% of the vote. You know, I've heard it repeated by public broadcasting. I've heard it repeated in the Daily Mail. I've heard it repeated in various places around the state. But the fact of the matter is it's not scientific because not one of these polls has my name even listed or my party even listed. They ask no questions about me or my position or my beliefs or even put me into the questions with the Democrat and Republican in a state that has three parties on the ballot for the last 10 years. So it's not scientific by definition. Now, secondly, they call you up at home. They call those data points. The theory is that they're collecting information. But what they actually do, these pollsters, they're planting seeds of information into the communities. They're not collecting information from the communities. So when you hear 10 questions and they only are about two out of three or four candidates, there's another level that lacks science. That lacks science. You may want to, I'm not advocating and saying that the Daily Mail's online poll that had me 2 points behind Racy and 10 points ahead of Manchin, I'm not saying that's a scientific poll either. I'm also.
But at least it acknowledges your existence.
Exactly. And I'm not saying that the poll that was published in the Gazette this morning that states that, you know, that asked the question, would you, would you vote for a third party candidate? And
44% of the people responding said yes.
Exactly. And about 10 days ago, there was a Gallup poll that said that the American people believe that the only way we can right the ills of this country is with a third party and with a third party candidate being elected. Thomas Friedman just wrote an article called Third Party Rising. You know, this happens. If you look at our American history, this happens every time we reach this kind of critical mass. And there is a mandate among the people for change. And that's what you saw reflected in the Tea Party, but it unfortunately was co-opted by Bo News Network and the neocons. And so it's mostly been about electing Republicans. But the angst of those people and those parties is genuine. It's real. They know something's wrong. They just don't know what it is. And so they listen to someone who proffers, who has the ability in the press to proffer an answer. But those people who are voting out of fear are doing it predicated on misinformation, on completely unscientific misinformation. And it's not, this misinformation is intentional because it is what is classically known as push polling.
Yes.
So then when you factor in what I said before and we discussed, that these guys who won these landslide victories in the special election won them on 10% of the electorate. Let's say that stood, and I polled 10%, just as was reflected in today's poll published in the Gazette this morning. I win in a landslide.
You're going to be the senator.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. If you really want somebody in Washington to stand up for West Virginia, if you really want somebody in Washington to stand up for the Constitution, if you really want somebody who is not going to be swayed by special interests, who's not going to back down for your best interest, then send the Mountain Party candidate to Washington and let the nation have to deal with that, because that's the shot that West Virginia can fire that could be heard around the world.
Well, Jesse, this program goes around the world.
Well, it can be a real mandate for change, and I hope that this conversation inspires that and inspires people to vote for their beliefs and not their fears, because it can happen, it does happen, and with your help and with the help of the voters in the state of West Virginia, it will happen.
Let me ask one last question, and that is this. This program does go around the world, and there are a lot of people who listen, and they are liberal. They are progressive. You know me, I prefer to wear the label liberal, because if the other side thinks that's so darn dirty, I want to wear it to refute it. But
doesn't that come from liberty?
Yeah, last I checked, yes. And they both come from a Latin root word meaning free.
Exactly.
But that having been said, there are liberals outside the state of West Virginia who would like to help you. They may not have any money. They certainly may not be able to buy you ads. But you know what? They can write emails. They can make phone calls. Do you have any kind of a structure set up so that folks can, like if you've got a phone list or something, so that people can participate wherever they may be in phone banking?
Absolutely. And as you know, when we in my speech in Appalachia Rising in Washington, D.C., you know, I stated that this is an opportunity for people to come to West Virginia to hit the ground if they have a weekend, whether they're if they're in a surrounding state, or they have the upward mobility to get to West Virginia for a week, for a weekend, for a few days, or until November. They can come and help. If they can't and they have and they're sitting at home and they have the ability to use the email and use the telephone, then, you know, I have a campaign for them to help out. And so, you know, they can certainly contact me via Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, the numeric 4, U.S. Senate, all one word, at gmail.com. And they can check out the website, Jesse, the same thing, Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, the numeric 4, U.S. Senate.com, .org, and Jesse for U.S. Senate on Facebook.
Okay, I'm jotting all of this down because I'm sure I'll get I will be questioned about it later. I hope that people will step up and help you, Jesse. Whatever I can do, as I said, I will do, and I will. My extended family, those who are old enough to vote, will be voting for you, and just hope like the Dickens others do too, because I will not vote out of fear. But I am afraid, Jesse. I am afraid. And I'm afraid of John Racey. And I am afraid of Joe Manchin. And I'm not afraid for myself. I'm not afraid any more than I get up in the morning and wonder what some 6'7" tall Arabic guy with one kidney and a portable dialysis machine living in a cave in Pakistan somewhere is going to do to me.
Right.
But I am darn sure afraid of what some guy in a bespoke suit doing the bidding of transnational corporations in this country is going to do to me, because they can do me a lot more harm and they can do it a lot more easily.
Well, I believe that people all across the state and the nation are sharing that fear, and the way to avoid it is to vote for me, to vote for a Mountain Party candidate, to vote a third party into a power structure that isn't ready for it, isn't designed for it, isn't accommodating to it, but will be shaken up by it. And that is real change. That is a real mandate for progress. That is a real mandate for us to take control. The citizenry, real citizens, that's people, not corporations, to take back control of their country, because it belongs to us. We have a responsibility for its stewardship. And if we don't do it, and we continue to abdicate our responsibilities of citizenship and give it up to corporations and their minions, then we will deserve to lose it.
That's about as profound a statement as I think I've heard a politician make in recent memory, Jesse. Jesse Johnson, thank you very much, and I hope that folks will go to the website, contact you directly, and from all over this country, volunteer to help you in any way that they possibly can. Best of luck, and you know what? This program's here. If you've got more message that you need to get out, all you got to do is give me a holler.
Well, thank you. I hope we can visit again before November 2nd.
I do, too. Take care, Jesse.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Mountain Party candidate for Senate from the Senate of the United States from West Virginia. That's Jesse Johnson. Jesse 4, the numeral 4. Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, for ussenate.com or .org. I imagine there's a redirect there. You can also reach him directly, Jesse for ussenate at gmail.com. And if you've got time, you know what? You are not going to go head-to-head with the kind of creeps who produce this kind of garbage. You're not going to win that battle. You're not going to win this.
Joe Manchin, I approve the Senate because I'll always defend West Virginia. As your senator, I'll protect our Second Amendment rights.
That's why the NRA endorsed me. I'll take on Washington and this administration to get the federal government off of our backs and out of our...
I'll shoot them!
I'll cut federal spending, and I'll repeal the bad parts of Obamacare. I sued EPA, and I'll take dead aim at the cap-and-trade bill.
Down and to the left.
Because it's bad for West Virginia.
Yeah, this that kind of swill, or, you know, this kind of swill.
Joe Manchin will do anything to avoid talking about being a rubber stamp for Barack Obama. I'm a businessman who's created thousands of jobs, but not bigger government. I'm not perfect, but you don't have to be to know Obama's policies have hurt us. Obamacare means big government. Cap and trade hurts coal. Obama's tax increases hurt families. And Joe Manchin rubber stamps all of these.
Rubber.
I'm John Racey, and I approve of this message.
And I won't have sex with Barack Obama. God, it's disgusting. Fear. And you're not going to win a battle over the media with that. You know where you can win? You know where the difference can be made? It can be made on the phone, and it can be made via email. One person at a time. And if you feel like helping somebody that needs help, probably... And help yourself. Remember, this may be a statewide race, but it has national implications. Yesterday was 10-10-10, the national day, the worldwide day of work. I don't know if you went over to 350.org or not, but it was. It was the worldwide work day. People coming together to work for climate justice, for a sustainable planet. And it was amazing. It started off in Australia and New Zealand, and then went around the world. And there were amazing stories. You can see them at 350.org, 350.org. And it was people working together. You know, you may think you are only one person in the world. But for one person, you may be the world. And that's the truth. And this is a statewide race with national implications. If you have any hopes whatsoever of ever seeing climate litigation, or legislation, I'm sorry, if you have any hope at all of ever seeing climate legislation, you might want to, no matter where you are, it matters not what state you're in, you might want to step up and volunteer for Jesse Johnson. Because Joe Manchin's done showed you. He'll get out his rifle shooting gun and start blowing away the Senate. Anybody that dares to say anything about the cap and trade, he'll shoot him. And John Racey will accuse him of having sex with Barack Obama. Because you know how that one is. It really is this simple. Help us win with Jesse Johnson. And you'll be helping yourself, your children, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and your progeny down the line as yet undreamt of. Because they just might have a nation fit to live in. On something as simple as what you do between now and the second day of November. Phone banking, email, talking to your friends, coming to West Virginia, knocking on doors. It can happen. And you know what? This is the grassroots. And this is where the rubber meets the road. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. Yeah.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Got an email in from Jim. He said, thank you for allowing this candidate to have a forum in which he has so ably presented his position, beliefs, and his desire to do genuine good for all and not vested corporate interests. Really is the heart of it, isn't it? Some people are motivated to run for political office by a sense of self-aggrandizement, by a sense of rampant ambition, by a sense of something that almost, if I believed in it, would remind me of demonic possession. In either Joe Manchin or John Racy's case, all of that. But this nation also has a history of people seeking public office who have a genuine desire to serve the people. It would seem that they have become rarer and rarer and rarer through the years. But once in a while, a person rises up and speaks up who actually wants to do the bidding of the people. You heard Jesse. He's got a much higher opinion of, you know, teabaggers than I do. He actually wants to dialogue with them. To find concord and common cause. And I admire that. Because it's so much more, he's a much bigger and better man than I am. And as Reverbo, our critic at large, notes, in regard to the John Lennon cut I played, I just can't get John off my mind. Stand by me. Reverbo says, it's never too late. And it isn't. It isn't. And before I do go back to the lines, and you know they're open, by the way, 877-443-2366, toll-free, 877-4-HEAD-ON. On your nickel, direct dial 304-658-3333 is how you reach the program. Before I do go back to the phones, I got one of those Make My Day emails today. We will leave names out of this for reasons that will become apparent. I have recently joined the Thrifty 250 and wanted to encourage you not to stop doing what you're doing. I'm in the Navy, enlisted, not an officer, and wanted you to know how much you help keep me sane. I listen every chance I get, and I often feel like I'm the only sane person in the military. There are not many of us who live in the reality-based world. Anyways, if you could just let your other listeners know that there are some of us temporarily in uniform who are not mindless robots and are true progressives, it would mean a great deal. We have to stand together to pull our country through these trying times. Thanks for all you do, Bob. No. Thanks for all you do. Sincerely. And I wrote back and I said, and it's true, of all the military branches of service, the Navy holds a special place in my heart. It was there that my father learned to be a man. He left this little community in the Second World War, as did his brother, his brother-in-law, and my mother's brother, and they're all Navy. His elder brother did not come home. He was in the Army. But it's the Navy that holds a special place in my heart. And I love the thought of someone serving in the Navy out there listening to the horn once in a while. Because, among other things, it would tickle that old salt my father's heart. In fact, I'm pretty sure it does. 14 minutes past the hour, and we do go to the phones. I hope you're still there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there, Bob. Great show so far.
Well, thank you.
I love hearing from these candidates. Actually, you know, you put two stones together, as it were. But I'm thinking, you know, down in the States, there's so many people who need a serious catharsis down there that perhaps we should be advocating for the election of some statistic psychologists that will remember that Robert's Rules of Orders and the Senate's Rules of Orders have neither the words sleep, privy break, washroom, or trauma in them, and perhaps go to town on them with all the tools of psychological warfare. Just, you know, not even saying, I'll pass something for the betterment of the country. I'll just pass something to cause trauma to those who have screwed you over. You know, just for the universal catharsis. I'm not too sure I'm at.
Yeah, just go and be a cactus thorn in somebody's side.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, the chat room says hi.
Oh, hi to the chat room.
Watching these direct action guys, Sea Shepherds, you may have heard of them, down trying to...
Oh, I love them.
So, and it's just amazing how much people with just, you know, the general just showing up. I think you were referencing Woody Allen there a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Getting anything done is just showing up has an effect. And, oh, what was it? I'm trying not to pull something on Brian's level. I don't have a wit for it. But Malcolm Gladwell had an article recently regarding effective use of social ties, strong social ties to get social change done. And he's saying that the Twitter and the Facebook and all that may not be the way to do it, but strong social ties, like we build in our chat room here, are ones that could actually cause something to change. And things have to be discussed for months ahead of time before an action that has any kind of effect happens. You know, not something you do with, oh, I like you on Facebook, and so I'm going to stand in front of a cop while his horse runs me over.
Well, indeed.
And everybody read that Malcolm Gladwell article that just came out. It puts things in sort of perspective. Yes, the Facebook liking and organizing online is great to get the information out, make people aware, but getting people effective, he states, it requires military precision. It requires hierarchical organization, and it's one of the reasons he cites the PLO was not effective early on until it became more top-down. It was struggling with fractionalization, factionalization, and a lack of message, as it were. It was the same thing can be said of the IRA. It was originally just, you know, sort of a network of people and
who were really, really... you've got to... I think what it points toward is that ultimately you've got to be, you got to have something more than anger going for you.
Definitely. You can see this every time you watch Whale Wars is, you know, what would happen if these people had military precision or discipline? You know, just the organizational ability. I'm not saying that the military is good or nice, but you know what? They do know how to organize vast swaths of otherwise untrained people into an effective unit. Whether that's used for good or evil, well, that's secondary to it, but you know, it's an effective psychological technique and sociological technique for getting people in the right direction all at the same time instead of, you know.
And that is the eternal conundrum of liberals and progressives. And I don't know if that's necessarily something that's specific to American liberals and progressives, or if liberals and progressives in other countries are better at it than we are. But we definitely, you know, it's that old line about, you know, herding cats. And I said, no, herding cats is easy compared to getting liberals and progressives organized in the U.S. because it's much more like wrangling butterflies. You know, at least if you open the can of tuna, you can get some of the cats, you know, going in the same direction. Butterflies, not so much. And we really do like to go in our own direction. And it's very frustrating because the other side is so massively, regimentedly, authoritarianly organized into groupthink and single-minded focus that sometimes it makes you wonder if we can ever pull it off.
Well, that's the thing. We're excellent at forming networks, communicating, getting together with others of like mind, even if it's by, you know, these little papers that Mike used to write for God's sake. They, you know, what was it? Not the butterfly, the speckled bird or something like that.
Yeah.
We got the communication down and the loose ties and all that, but the strong ties, you need to form little cliques of people. I mean, it doesn't take much, but find five people in your local area. It's this whole making these online communities, real communities, offline communities. That whole movement to get people from the Facebook into reality, you know, meet at the local library, meet at the local church, synagogue, what have you, and get together and discuss things. Because it's, again, that whole Woody Allen showing up is half the thing. If you can get them there physically, the social ties will take care of themselves. The close, strong bonds that Malcolm Gladwell was talking about in his recent article will pay off. And I guess Chris Hedges is the one that led me on to the Malcolm Gladwell article. He was citing it. He's got one out recently on Truth Dig. And I recommend you reading it. Just to, you know, anything he puts out is usually worth reading.
Without a doubt, yeah. Well,
I'm not here saying, oh, we got to start raising hell and, you know, getting the guns out and all that stuff, but, you know, if that bigger hammer, if that's not, you know, on the extreme left side of the herd of people, then, you know, the people on the right are pushing everything progressively to the right. It's not that the people on the stupid left need to get what they want. It's that if you don't have, hey, you can deal with us, or you got to deal with those guys with the guns over there who are drooling at the mouth, you know, it backs you up. It's the same reason you have a military when you're doing diplomacy, is occasionally diplomacy doesn't work and you need somebody to pump someone to get the point across.
It's interesting you bring all of this up, though, because I was talking about it on Facebook earlier today with David in South Carolina and a couple of other folks. What's frustrating is the willingness, and it was there was a reference to it Friday night, I think, in my conversation with Susan, that post from over at Democratic Underground about the new silent majority. We really are tired of listening to the crazy old drunk dude at the end of the bar screaming about that Kenyan communist, and yet by the same token, you know, he's so loud and he's so obnoxious, and you know, it's just better if we don't say anything. I mean, why should we? We know he's nuts.
Whatever happened to the days when he used to throw these people out of the bars?
There! Yes, that!
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
That's the same reason political correctness works. It's a way of, how does political correctness work? Well, people look with you on scorn when you use the N-word for black people. I don't know all the racial terms on it, but whenever you use a bad word for a definite group of people, people look at you and say, hey, you're a bleep hole. Stop that. Don't do that. Or get the hell out of here. I don't want to hear that in my establishment. That kind of thing. It's a social corrective. It's effective. It works. People back in the day used this because, hey, I can't use the N-word anymore. So now my kids never heard the N-word out of my mouth. They never heard it being parlanced about. It was unacceptable. So they get beyond. They get to the next level. And then their kids get to the next level. And guess what? In a couple generations, you have people thinking misogyny is some sort of myth that was back from the here and beyond.
Yeah, cavemen did that.
Exactly.
And no, we don't want to be cavemen.
A hair kind of thing.
Yeah.
I can never even buy that. What the hell started that off? I mean, I know it was a cartoon, but seriously? You know, somebody thought that was funny at some point to bop a girl on the head and drag her back to your place. And that, again, I guess I'm just a product of...
Well, personally, I tend to give cave dwellers a lot more credit than they are actually afforded in the culture at large. Because I stand more than willing to be corrected by our actual experts in the field who do this sort of thing, but the archaeological record is replete with evidence that these were sensitive, peoples who were working together to further their continued survival. And it really, going off and whacking a woman in the head with a club and dragging her by the hair back to your cave is really at odds with what we do know from the record of stone tools and habitation evidence. It's really at odds with the record of they left us of how they lived. You know, these are people who did art. These are people who made mother goddesses.
I wonder if these Western Europeans that were going around the New World exploring all these wonderful places didn't get a little, gynophobic or something like that. Their dander up every time they encountered a new tribe, since the majority of populations that they encountered are reportedly, if you look in detailed records, were run as a matriarchy. Yeah, the men ran around killing people and such at the behest of...
Well, you know, if you'll forgive me saying so, I will posit that this is the only radio show that has aired anywhere on the planet today in which gynophobic has been used in common conversation. And I want you to know that I'm damned proud of that. The rest of the world can talk about how well Bristol Palin did on Dancing with the Idiots. We're talking gynophobia here, and frankly, I think you're right. The advent of any sky god religion is always going to be gynophobic, and that's the evidence as it exists. You know, you mentioned the Europeans getting froggy and going out and traveling around. I got up this morning, I looked at the clock, and I looked over at Agnes, and I said, good God, we've overslept. The kids missed the bus. And she goes, well, no, they're not. They don't go to school today. And that kind of scratched my little bald spot. And wait a minute, it's October the 11th. Is this the day that James Garfield got shot or something? And it took me the longest time, and I'm proud of the fact that it took me the longest time to realize, oh, wait a minute. The government offices are closed too, aren't they? It's Columbus Day.
We call it Turkey Day up here. It's our Thanksgiving.
Oh.
A thing in November.
Well, I hope the bird was tasty.
Daunting endeavor. I don't do turkey. I'll go and get it from someone else. Being a vegetarian, you know, I bet I was raised as a non-vegetarian. I have a secret warm spot for turkey a la king. But
ooh.
It's such a daunting proposition. That's such a huge bloody bird, and then you have, at the end of the day, I'm sorry, but I saw too many of those aliens shows, movies too early in my life, that seeing a rib cage on my dinner table.
Yeah, that one? Right. No, I know exactly of which you speak, but I'm all excited. I'll never have the money to buy one because there's too much other stuff to be paid for. But now, you talk about turkeys being daunting. It's utterly undaunting now. They have come up with electric infrared turkey fryers. No oil, no grease, no third degree burns, some redneck running through the front yard. It's just, you put it in, 45 minutes later, take it out, it's done, no problem, no worry, no muss, no fuss.
But watch some redneck do a flame on or across your front lawn as he's trying to do a nuke a turkey, and his front lawn is, you know, one of the signs of the season, man. I mean,
well, it is, but it's also, it slows down everyone else's holiday while you're putting a redneck out. That's right good and tasty. The idea of Columbus Day just drives me nuts. And a couple of years ago, I actually read the story when the data first came out, and it was incontrovertible. I don't know if you're aware of this, but when the data first came out that the Vikings got here first, there were damn near riots in some places. I mean, there was screaming and howling and carrying on in New York City that you would not believe. Because somehow or another, somewhere along the way, Columbus Day got turned into an Italian national holiday. I'm not kidding. But the idea, when you look at what Columbus did, and you look at the diseases he spread and the peoples that he wiped out, you know, he was responsible for the end of a good handful of native tribes in the Caribbean without even trying. And we're still taking a day off. I mean, can't we find something else to celebrate in the United States of America around the second week of October?
Yeah, I just finished reading Howard Zinn's The 20th American 20th Century or something like that. And God, does that not... It's hard to get through that. It really is without screaming at the book. They don't tend to respond, so it makes it look even crazier.
Oh, I know. My kids have come to just expect that. Dad's, because, you know, their grandfather talked to the television. I talked to books. You know, oh, no, you didn't. You did. You did. And, yeah. So, no, I understand. I understand how that could possibly happen altogether too well. Well, it's awfully good talking to you. And a happy holiday up there in the not quite frozen north yet. You're not freezing yet, are you?
No, I'm in Nanaimo, British Columbia, so I'm just toasty warm. It's about 15 degrees out.
Oh, beautiful.
Clear skies can be, and it's quite pleasant.
You know, I've been having a conversation with somebody out that way, talking about trying to get me out there to sort of do a little link up with some folks opposing what the coal companies are doing to folks out in your direction.
Yeah, we got a tungsten company that's going to open up a new mine and blast off the top of a mountain. And we're trying to get the natives on side and a bunch of other things. It's just going south. It's really hard to fight money.
Well, it is, but, you know, sometimes you just got to fight the fight. Well, good to hear from you.
Thank you very much for having me, and good show, mate.
Oh, well, thank you very kindly. Don't be a stranger.
Won't be.
All right. Bye now. Half past the hour, and we roll on. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hello? Huh. I hate it when that happens. Well, lines are open if you want to jump in. I don't know why I lost that call, but I did. You know, someday... Someday I'll have a full studio. No, you know, you heard from Jesse Johnson, and he makes a compelling case. Obviously, he's made the case to me for why I should vote for him. And yet, still, you see this, and even in places where you'd be surprised to see it, even if Manchin is a Republican in Democrats' clothing, he'll still help us keep the majority in Congress. And just might vote with Dems some of the time. Really? That's a reason for casting something that is so precious that human beings in this country have died for it? He's better than... he's not a pile of shit. He's a little bit better than a pile of shit. I'm sorry. Can't do that no more. Won't do that no more. It's intolerable. And no, in answer to the question, in case maybe this comes up in conversation and somebody, well, you know, but he's a Democrat and we got to keep the majority in the Senate. Horse feathers! Joe Manchin will make Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln look like Paul Wellstone and Ted Kennedy. Are we clear on this? He won't vote with the Democrats. Well, I mean, he'll vote with a Democrat. He'll vote with John D. Rockefeller whenever it comes time to snuggle up and kiss the ass of the coal industry. But that's about as much as you'll get. You know, I'm harsh. But I didn't start out harsh. I was made harsh. You know, I'm sure that maybe John Racy's mother loved him. Maybe his daddy did, too. Maybe his children. Does he have children? I don't know. Does he even know where they live in that mansion in Florida? I don't know. Maybe somebody loves John Racy. But anybody who holds the position, that takes the positions that he takes on issues, certainly doesn't have any regard for me or mine. And I am in no way beholden to have any regard for him. And the same goes for Joe Manchin. Joe's a slightly nicer guy than John Racy. But where Racy's got a mansion, Joe had a yacht. where the fall to Rawls around in Florida. Joe takes the state plane and goes to basketball games on my dime. God, it's a dream too distant. It is a wish too fervent to think that the people of my state, this state that has been beaten and bedraggled and dragged from rack to ruin, might actually have legitimate, concerned, compassionate representation in the Senate of the United States. It's enough to make you cry. But I won't cry. And I won't be afraid. All I can do is what I'm allowed to do by the law. And I will do that. By the way, a couple of emails coming in. Kate writing in, and she says, I would like to thank Jim for his very moving call about the Lobos. She says, currently in Montana, there's a huge debate about taking the wolf off the endangered species list. There's evidence that the population of wolves is increasing after they were put on the list and after some pairs have been relocated. Those who want the packs thinned out are contending that the wolves are killing cattle and disrupting the game herds. How can you disrupt a game herd when the job of the wolf in the scope of evolution is to feed on the game herds? That's sort of dominionist approach to life on the planet that I so thoroughly reject. Kate notes, those in opposition seem to be losing the battle. The issue is disrupting the social structure all over this part of the state. To be pro-wolf is more dangerous than being a queer, democratic socialist who's opposed to coal and tar sand exploitation and illegal wars. Can't tell them apart. Can't even start a conversation in the checkout line without fear of offending someone. Out in the big sky country, that's Kate. Juanita was also touched by what Jim said. She said, Jim beautifully told, wolves are special. And so we go forward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, a longtime fan of yours up here on the North Coast.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
No, not bad at all, and I very much appreciated the guest that you had on there, because I certainly share his concerns for democracy, elections that are honest, that we have a vote that counts as our own vote. You know, I'm afraid that candidates that are running for office that are honest on that point, those that speak out and say, I don't have any faith in the voting machines, I believe they can be tampered with, that person is saying, if I'm right, I am not going to have a chance in hell of being elected, because those people who control these voting machines aren't going to select anybody that's going to try to take away their thing. But I am so convinced of it myself that I feel that in every way that we can, we need to make people aware that this is going on, that it is so easy with voting machines that have modems for these high-tech types to just jump into them and make things come out the way they want them. I'm rambling on a bit, but I...
No. I think more than anything, Dave, what it boils down to, especially, and I'm falling back on the words of Brad Friedman, it's the fact that you can never, ever, with any of these touchscreen machines, now, as he's explained it to me, the optical scan things are somewhat better. You know, the best thing in the world is still an ink pen and a piece of paper with a little X in a box.
Yeah.
But the optical scans are better than the touchscreens. But the touch screens, there are none of them in which the, and this is the critical part, because it's sort of, while it's sort of legalistic, it's what matters. In no touch screen system can the actual intent of the voter using it ever be fully verified. And if you can't verify voter intent, it wasn't a vote.
You know, and we get a lot of wonderful people, attorneys, competent, good people, going down to our registrar's office and watching what's going on. They're watching a computer, and what's going on inside that computer, they haven't got idea one. But, you know, electronically, they can be flipping votes at will and choosing for us whoever they want us to have. And that is, to me, really scary. That is the end of democracy for the United States. I do believe that it's more than just the elections. You know, it's happening to this in the primaries. And it's also happening to us on opinion polls, that when they go out and there's paper and pencil, get people's opinions on anything, including candidates, and then they bring all that back into the company, the ZOGBI or ABC polling, and they start entering all that data into the computer. Well, that same computer has a modem, and that same computer can be invaded, and so we get to look at polls that sound like, wow, America really wants to get screwed over again. We want another Bush, according to that poll. But that poll ain't got nothing to do with reality. That's my honest opinion. I think it's just too damn easy for these tech goons to go right into those computers and flip them. And I also would say, I remember clearly that in several precincts across this country, where they had just 200 or 300 registered voters, that same precinct delivered 6,000-7,000 votes to George Bush. Now, how did it do that? And surely you should have a recount when that kind of thing happens.
But of course, Dave, the problem is when that happens, because there were touchscreen voting machines involved, you can't have a recount.
What is there to be recounted? Right.
Because you, once again, not trying to beat the drum or anything, because there is no way to verify the intent of the voter.
But you suddenly can ask the question, how did this 250 registered voters delivered 6,500 votes to George Bush? How did they do that, you know? If each one got 150 votes, maybe. Well,
there you go. Well, Dave, it's good to hear from you, my friend.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm making my point as best I can, and I hope...
And you've made it well.
...across the country, because I really think the noble thing to do is to dress up as early Native Americans and go take these voting machines and throw them into the bay. That's maybe a little extreme, but that's where my head is at.
Or even in places where we don't have bays, just chuck them in the creek.
There you
go. All right, Dave, you take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Calling from Northern California, that's our buddy Dave. And onward we go. Nope, okay. Am I having phone problems here? I don't know. Now, I gotta... How's this for an idea? I got this from Sandra earlier today. You know, I read an email on the program from our buddy Scott in Sweden, where he said he was just too damned angry to be cute or funny or witty or anything about this sludge dam burst in Hungary that has sent a tide of toxic waste aluminum sludge into the Danube River and has killed 8 people and displaced and rendered homeless the hundreds of others. Then later in the day, I got another email pointing out the fact that it looks like a sludge dam may be bursting or have burst in Mozambique. And yet we're quite certain that one of those multi-billion gallon toxic waste seas will never let loose in southern West Virginia. And by God, when it does, it won't be 8 dead. It won't be 100 dead. They will be measured in the thousands. But that's okay, because Joe Manchin's looking for balance, and John Racy is afraid that something's going to be hard on coal. But Sandra sent me a story this morning via the New York Times. And, you know, what a novel concept. You have to love this. not that it happened, but how it's being responded to. Dateline Budapest, the managing director of the company, whose reservoir, come on, New York Times, you can do better than that, whose toxic waste impoundment unleashed a lethal torrent of red sludge on three villages last week, has been arrested. Why, look at that. Criminal justice in Hungary. We're not so good at it here yet. Has been arrested, the Hungarian Prime Minister said Monday, castigating the company for corporate greed in remarks before Parliament. Quote, and this from Prime Minister Viktor Orban, there's probable cause to suspect that there were persons who had been aware of the dangerous weakening of the storage pond walls, but they thought because of their private interests that it was not worth mending them and hoped the disaster wouldn't happen. That's nicely said. What Prime Minister Orban was alluding to was the fact that the corporate executive put profits ahead of people. The arrested official, Zoltan Bakhony, is the son of Arpad Bakhony, a businessman who played a central role in the Oh, look! A businessman is the son of Arpad Bakhony, a businessman who played a central role in the privatization of the country's aluminum industry, and is the largest shareholder of the company now under scrutiny. A company formerly owned by the state called MAL. The elder Mr. Bakhony is also a close business associate. That means he's a fellow traveling thug of a former prime minister named Ferenc Gyurcsány, who is Mr. Orbán's political arch rival. Apparently, they have a crime in Hungary called criminal negligence leading to a public catastrophe. Let's see if we can get somebody on one of those in the House of Representatives and the Senate. Yeah. In a statement to the Hungarian news agency MTI, Mr. Bakhony denied breaking any rules and said that the most recent inspections had shown no anomalies. We observed every regulation to the letter. $200 million of caustic red sludge, the byproduct of the conversion of bauxite to alumina for aluminum, poured out of a reservoir after part of its containing wall collapsed. The cascade killed 8 people, injured hundreds. Hundreds more have been forced from their homes. Tens of millions of dollars in private property have been destroyed. And as part of the response, the Hungarian government simply took control of MALZRT, the Hungarian Aluminum Production and Trade Company. A state commissioner would be appointed to manage the company and its assets. The Prime Minister telling Parliament, we need to hold the company responsible for the red sludge spill under state control. Of course, what are the corporatists in Hungary calling that? It's a power grab. A power grab. It doesn't matter the language, does it? The phrases are always the same. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire. This is my second try tonight. The last call you lost, that might have been my Vonage, my router box for my Vonage food system. The error code comes up again. and again and again.
It's got to drive. It's just.
I save $50 a month from the other local phone system here, but in terms of stress, I'm wondering if it's worth it there. But I have to stay with them a year with the contract. But I'm supporting another guy that's close to. I like what Mr. Johnson had to say. A lot of it. I didn't like his dismissive remarks about progressives. And, you know, it's just that your last, the second or third caller ago, they were talking about progressives. So we have been out there for years, as well as not just the online activism, but for years in demonstrations that the right-wing media that coddles these Tea Partiers, these great right-wing thinkers, these Tea Partiers and the rest of the Republican, that social Darwinist, the fascist, including their collaborators like Joe Manchin. The fact is, they've been so coddled, they get all the coverage by the media, no matter how big. It's the biggest anti-war demonstration, I believe, in recorded media, modern media history, were against the second invasion of Iraq in March 2003 by King G.W. Bush II, the famous February 15, 2003 demonstration. And people all over the world, they were saying anywhere from 10 to 15 million people were on the streets, and including millions in this country, progressives were leading the way. But the fact is, it got nil to none in terms of coverage. It just as they dismissed the latest turnout there, October 2nd, there on the mall in Washington there and all that, they didn't try to walk in the same area as Giants did there, using that August 28th date the way that fascist Beck did there, speaking that he was going to posit himself in the position of a Martin Luther King or Abraham Lincoln, for God's sake. They were just trying to be positive and be thinking, reasoning Americans, and that's gotten nil to no coverage. I don't have cable TV since going back to 2000, so I'm asking you, has that really gotten much? It's nothing like the teabaggers have been lavished. They've lavished advertisements and the build up to that August 28th rally, or whatever you want to call it there, by Beck. They just lavished nothing but attention on it for weeks and months before and afterwards, whereas this the October 2nd rally, I don't think they did.
No.
What do you think?
No, yeah. I think your analysis is quite correct.
And that's what I'm saying, that it's hard to keep the faith if it's just going to be all the effort is not going to be get any kind of, because the news media is anti-news media now. It's anti the truth.
Well, did you hear what Jesse said about, they treat him as though, he's imaginary.
Yeah, he made some great points overall, though, too. Because he's speaking for the real West Virginian out there, and, you know, that really care about the people of West Virginia, about their drinking water, for God's sakes, about the health of their children, away from the cancer wards by the time before they're 30. If this keeps up, you're saying now, that are they going to open up Blair Mountain of all places there to that mountaintop removal?
They're already doing it. And Joe Manchin was the one who worked actively to get it off the National Register of Historic Places.
That's disgusting. That should be up there with Gettysburg and the rest of the, you've taught me so much about Appalachia and just its role. It's undeniable that its role in the labor movement of this nation, and the fact is the labor movement's role in the larger scale. I look at things from a micro level far better than I do on a micro level, Bob. I've been told that when I go off my medication and I start shouting too much and I drive customers out of stores, I've been kicked out of it, even with my veterans DD-214, because I was arguing with these injured veterans there at a local veterans hospital. This was about 2005, about the Iraq War, that Saddam Hussein was a bigger enemy of al-Qaeda than even America was, because he was a secular leader. There was a mad war, it's for profiteers, I tried to do it as politely as I could, and I knew the people were suffering, but the people, you know, when they started trying to blame, somebody started trying to blame Bill Clinton, I lost it. for the George W. Bush's invasion of Iraq, and for the 9/11 attacks.
See, I could never think about that without George W. Bush's nasally little ignorant. He tried to kill my daddy.
And for the 9/11 attacks, they had the nerve to blame Clinton. It was one of the hospital staff. It wasn't one of the injured guys there. Too many people were just want to believe that simplistic, that's convenient, willful ignorance. Again, that's what they coddle the Tea Partiers when they make these insane statements and vicious, cruel scapegoating statements there about it, illegal immigrants, about Barack Obama, about you name it, you know, and just the Democrats that they're trying to socialize America, where Barack Obama's been the corporations, especially the big pharma and the private health care industry, he's been their biggest friend with his latest health care so-called reform bill, but it's still, it was just a foot in the door to give some rights to the American patients. Over time, health care is supposed to be health care. It's not supposed to be health insurance industry for profits, uberales, and then we'll worry about whether we can cure you, if we can check your if your credit rating is worthy of being cured. We're not units of economic measure, for God's sake, like Rand Paul and Ron Paul want to dismiss us into being. We're citizens, for God's sakes.
And, you know, you mentioned Rand Paul. That's another thing worth yeah. recalling, Brian. Is that, frankly, position-wise, there's not a hell of a lot of difference between Joe Manchin and Rand Paul.
I noticed that, especially in that mountaintop removal. And, dear God, that Blair Mountain is... Oh, that's this... Oh, that is an evil act. He well knows the history of Blair Mountain, too, I'm sure. That's absolutely... You know, there's the same thing. You talk about willful ignorance. George W. Bush, he says, well, I had to go after Saddam. He tried to kill my daddy. Well, the fact is that so-called hit squad in 1993, Bill Clinton, you know, he launched the air attacks against Iraq and all that. But it wasn't even the gang who couldn't shoot straight. It was a non-existent gang, apparently, because for the next 4 or 5 weeks, his brother Marvin Bush was partying nightly there in Kuwait City, in Kuwait, where the assassins were supposed to be. The brother of the Bush family, of George W. Bush, the next anointed president, and the son of the so-called assassin, would-be assassin victim, Pompey Bush, he partied for weeks and weeks in Kuwait City after the so-called assassination attempts, after Bill Clinton had done the bombing and all that, too. If Saddam's assassins were so fearless and ruthless and Nazi-like and efficient, he wouldn't have been alive. And maybe that would have been a good thing in terms of he was head of security or part of that security apparatus at World Trade Center, Marvin Bush. And I didn't mean to talk to you. You can put your ears back on, Bob.
No, I haven't lost a single ear here, so don't worry.
Okay, but I want to get, there was a guy I'm working for now, and I don't want to get my already manic mind if I go off in too many directions there. I'm working for a guy, you know, they all the attention's gone to this O'Donnell last there in Delaware, and I think Chris Coons, the Democrat for U.S. Senate, he's the type of guy, he's a real public servant. He really believes in honest government there on all parties, from Democrats, Republicans alike, that any kind of corruption by anybody, regardless of party, cannot be tolerated. And he just he's far more qualified than Miss O'Donnell, for God's sakes. And Chris Coons, Democrat for U.S. Senate, it's at chriscoons.com. His last name is spelled Coons.com.
Yes.
And he's really qualified. He says he lets Miss O'Donnell's own presentation really explain her the fact that he's trying to be polite about it, but that he just let her bring out her, in her own words, why she's unqualified to be a senator, for God's sake. And I you know, was it, you have that the guy there, I want to make it quick, I know you're running short on time, the guy from Alabama there, your great writer there,
Matt Osborne,
okay, and he's got a lot of musician friends, and Marty Feldman and his great eyes that could go in different...
Oh, yes, yes.
Well, Christine O'Donnell, she doesn't have eyes quite like that, but in a way you could say, you remember the song, if they can do something with this, that they're welcome to it, too, it's a great idea, I think, but they know how to do it if they think her eyes are that far apart. But, instead of she's got Betty Davis eyes, that song, you could say, Christine O'Donnell...
has Marty Feldman eyes.
Yeah, she gazes out at Delaware Bay and LA.
Well, you know, Saturday Night Live did a pretty good number on her this...
Yeah, Christine O'Donnell, she's got Marty Feldman eyes.
Hey, Brian, you have a great night, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Brian calling from New Hampshire with the last call of the night. It's time to get out of here. Kate reminding me, save 90 seconds to pitch this nickel program again. Yeah, seriously, please, if you're part of the Nifty 250 and you haven't kicked in your $10 for the month, please feel free to do so. You know, if you don't like PayPal, I understand. We've got a snail mail address there at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab. Literally, mail it in. It'll be fine. Boss Man Wayne goes to the mailbox once a week, and he's, I can't tell you how happy he is when he sees checks coming in. $5, $10, doesn't matter. He's thrilled to see him, as am I, and it all goes toward the same end. You know, we are still looking for 250 people to do $10 a week, and help pick up some of the slack for, regulars who have carried the weight for lo these many, many months. Because come on. Less than 5 cents an hour? This isn't worth that? I know it's gotta be. Because I know the work that goes into it. Not just mine, but everybody else's. The Lottie and our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, and our blogger Texas Betsy, and Matt Osborne, and Reverbo, and my head writer David in Tennessee, and God knows, John Fox, and Ben Birch. A lot of work for less than 5 cents per hour. Whew. Yes, indeedy. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and the PayPal button there. You know, it was kind of funny. Friday night, we went to bed. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and the phone started ringing. And it rang 8 times between 4 and 5 until I was afraid it was somebody in the family. Something bad had happened. And I finally got and answered it, and it wasn't. It was somebody who had apparently just discovered the program, and I told them when it was, this is not live right now. And then I sat for a minute and thought, you know, I'm not going back to bed quite yet. And 3 minutes later, the phone rang, and it was the same person again saying, well, when is it live? And I said, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday. So I was kind of hoping we'd get that call, but we didn't. And so, yeah, you'll have that sometimes. But, you know, you're welcome to call in. Hey, it's time to get out of here and get out of the way for Rick Smith, live from behind the Scrapple Curtain, the Rick Smith Show, coming to you live in just a matter of seconds. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the middle of the week, and it's here already. My apologies for my absence last night, but you know what? I gotta tell you something. It looks like Tuesdays may be compromised for a while yet because, among other things, this committee appears to want to meet on Tuesday evenings. And it is fairly important that I am... look, how do I explain this? I'm going to be taking Tuesday nights to attend these committee meetings, at least until I see whether or not this committee has any validity to it. For one reason and one reason only. Well, actually, several reasons.